From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway, a half hour in which you'll be able to hear some commentary and analysis, and if we're really on our game, some insight into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
Glad to be here.
We're so glad to see you, Alan. It's a wonderful thing. And here's Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York.
Good day, folks.
Good day to you. And the editor of the Daily Gazette from Schenectady, Judy Patrick, is here.
I'm glad to be here as well.
Great to have you. And you're a short-termer. You're just about to leave your job and walk out of the newsroom for the last time. My goodness sakes.
Yeah, I've been accused of having senioritis.
Any advice, Ira, since you left a newsroom not that long ago?
I think she will find that the transition from point A to point B is going to be much easier than she anticipates. Mm. You don't think you'll ever want to leave, and then the day you leave, you wonder what took so long.
Huh. You don't miss the pace of having the news constantly in your face?
Not in the state that the industry is currently in. I was happy to escape.
You know, it's very interesting that you say that, because, you know, I used to do Channel 6 every night for years. It's how I got my kids through college, and then Channel 13 for a number of years. Then I said, when I quit at SUNY, my other job, I thought that the world would end. I thought it would be over. There would be no more.
That they couldn't carry on without you, you mean?
Well, no, that I would walk in the street and nobody would know who I was. You know, because there are people who come up to me in the street and they say, Mr. Television Man, Mr. Television Man. And they say things to me, I watch you do the weather every night. And you know what? All these years later, they're still saying I watch you on television every night.
But you found, as did I, that you were wrong. You didn't. It was not a difficult
Ira,
transition.
Ira, you got me back on track. Yeah. You're exactly right. I found I didn't miss it at all. If I go to a cocktail party in the Berkshires, they certainly know about WAMC and what I do. But if I walk in the streets, they might not know me the same way. It's okay. We're all going to die.
Well, and on to cheery thoughts here.
Yeah, I'm certainly going to stay interested in the news and in journalism, but I actually think I'm going to withdraw from some of these social media platforms. I think I'm going to be one of those people that says no to Facebook, no to Twitter from going on.
Really?
We'll see. I mean, it's easy to say, but I think it's gotten boring for me. And if I don't have to do it as a job, I may not do it anymore.
I think the outlet that I have here and that you will have here on occasion, every couple of weeks, every 3 weeks, if I show up here and start talking about issues, that's enough. But it gives me a little bit of an outlet.
A little bit of a fix,
yeah,
as you say.
Yeah.
Hmm. Newsflash, a defection from Fox News. One of the things that's happened over the last 1,400 shows is that we have seen the rise of the power of cable television news, and especially Fox News, who many people believe got a president elected. Fox News military analyst Ralph Peters has quit the network, and he has called it a propaganda machine on his way out. Which supposedly hit like a bombshell, according to a report on CNN. Fox News executives were rattled by the leak, afraid that the story has the potential to grow legs because Ralph Peters, the Fox News military analyst, is a fierce conservative with a lot of credibility within the conservative community. And another conservative writer, Max Boot, applauded it. He says, years ago, before the rise of Trump, I used to think that Fox performed a harmless service by publicizing conservative ideas. It has since become clear that its worldview has little to do with conservatism and everything to do with populism and white nationalism. Is it possible that we are seeing the beginning of the crumbling of the power of Fox News?
It absolutely is possible, and I believe that's what's happening. You know, there are a lot of people who are looking inward right now and saying, when the special prosecutor comes out with his report, and when all of this thing begins to fold, and it does look like Trump is getting crazier and nuttier, you know, all the time, they want out from under it. I mean, who wants to be part of that? Because they know what history is going to portray this guy as, and they want out.
You know, it is surprising. There are those who believe that the power of cable TV is what made all the difference. The New York Times columnist Russ Douthat has done a column saying that it wasn't for all the talk about Facebook and social media being what elected Donald Trump. He says really it was cable television. For example, CNN hired a half dozen pro-Trump pundits after Trump got the nomination, rather than the usual conservative pundits who were allied against him. That is, they went out of their way, and this kind of goes to one of Alan's longtime theories, the Shartok theory of F sharp. They knew what to do, to which key to press to get a certain sound, and they went for it and got it.
Well, that's a great point. CNN now has a young woman on who clearly is not up to the task. I wish I could give you her name. I cannot. But she's been introduced into the mix right now, and she's not that good. However, I suspect, Rex, you made a very good point, unusually good point for you, in which you identify the fact that they are very aware that they have to have a certain quotient of people on the air. And they know by their demographics that, you know, young people don't necessarily watch CNN or MSNBC. They don't. So they say, okay, well, we got to get one of those.
You know, as somebody who waded through all that cable talk during the election, there were times when Anderson Cooper had so many people on his panels, there were like a dozen people. Every person got to talk maybe 15 seconds, although Kellyanne Conway usually talked for 3.5 minutes. it seemed there was those pro-Trump people. And what happened was the conservative message got completely lost. I don't think conservatives even know what they stand for.
You know, the danger of Fox News is not simply the opinions that they take, although they can be pretty radical, particularly from the Hannitys of the world. And in fact, this guy Peters, who we were just
Lieutenant
talking
Colonel
about,
Peters,
yeah, he actually was suspended at one point from Fox News for going too far. So you can imagine if he thinks that Fox has gone too far, it's gone way too far. But if you watch Fox News on any given night, and just do a little channel surfing, and you watch CNN and you watch MSNBC, it's not so much that Fox News is taking a conservative point of view. They may not even be talking about the story that is on every other news.
Exactly.
So people who are watching Fox News, and there are a lot of them, and they do not watch other programs, literally have no idea what's going on in the world because Fox News is not talking about it.
Yeah, but I want to go back to something that Rex just said perceptively, and that is there is a big difference between being a conservative and being a Trumpster. The conservatives, people like, is it Crystal, who's on CNN on, you know, I used to look at his face and say, ugh, this guy's awful. Now he's saying things I like. And that's because there is a real schism in the so-called conservative movement between the Trumpsters and the conservatives. And we are seeing that. Look, you think that this record-breaking budget that the Congress is now coming up with, it would have satisfied, if it were a Democratic president, would have satisfied Republicans, they would be screaming at him. Again and again, the conservatives are taking different views from the Trump people. And that, of course, is got to be troubling.
Which is the point that Ross Douthat of The Times is making. He wrote about CNN in particular, using that as the example, hiring these pundits who were pro-Trump. He writes, the depth and breadth of Trump's skepticism among right-wing pundits was a pretty solid indicator of his unfitness for high office. And I doubt it's a conservative. He's saying the conservatives were against Trump. But, he writes, especially once he won the nomination, the skepticism was often filtered out of cable coverage because the important thing was to maintain the partisan shouting match model. So that's what it is that cable is looking for, the entertainment value of the way they present the news, as opposed to an accurate portrayal of the real nature of the thinking among the pundit class, let's say, even on the right.
And Bill Kristol is a good example of that you described. There are others. Jennifer Rubin, the columnist at The Washington Post, has all of a sudden become the liberals' new best friend because she has been sporting a line similar to Kristol. Bret Stephens of the New York Times, formerly the Wall Street Journal, same thing. The question is, are the conservatives are following those conservatives, or are they going to continue to follow Trump's brand of conservatism or whatever his brand is?
And you're right about the fights. There's nothing like a good fight, a good verbal sparring match on any of these shows. If you're, as I do, I have a phone in my hand watching what's going on social media at the same time. Twitter will light up when there is a big fight, and it's entertaining. And they encourage that.
Well, right. I hate when people use words like entertaining because, you know, this is a president of the United States, unfortunately, who has his finger on the nuclear button. I mean, this guy could destroy us all, so that while we find his meanderings and his rantings and his ravings to be entertaining, you got to really understand what's at stake here.
But you've got to understand that those are entertainment shows. If you want news, you read a newspaper.
You guys go again.
But bringing this back down to the media level, let's talk about CNN for a second.
Yeah.
Because they're getting vilified by Trump, but their ratings in general have gone down, although they seem to be doing well. All of the boats have risen. But MSNBC and Fox News are dominating the cable news wars. CNN, so much of their program are these panels. And I just find it, maybe they should go back to what they were supposed to be doing in the beginning, which was report the news here and abroad and become legitimately the news channel, as opposed to tonight's story is about Trump. They report the story. Now let's talk about it with our panel. And then they fight with each other for a half hour.
Well, you know, the nuances are so interesting. For example, CNN, and we got a letter here last week about CNN having done the series on the Kennedys, which is a hit job. It's a real hit job on the Kennedys.
Is it?
Yeah. The things you don't know and all the rest of it. And one wonders, because we're looking at Zuckerberg and Facebook, and we keep hearing the revenue models are what are controlling everything. So I'm fascinated by that. But, you know, I watch look, there's so much entertainment. You're so right about this. You watch what they're doing now. You know about the glass tables? Are you guys aware of what the glass tables are? Now, Judy's going to give me the fisheye.
What is? Yeah, there you go. See?
I'm looking at this table here. This table is not glass.
This is not glass. Right. I don't know what this substance is here.
Because we are not on television, and we're not showing your legs.
Oh, but you don't see that much.
Nor iris, nor mine.
No, but to see, Fox News still leads the way in that. The other cable news channels do not often do that.
Oh, iris, don't kid yourself.
No, it's true.
Don't kid yourself. Don't kid yourself. They put the model-like commentator at the end of the table. The skirts are predictably short, you know, and you see through the table. Come on, these guys know exactly what they're doing.
I'm afraid to say I don't look for that.
You know, I don't know anything
so good,
about
Ira.
The glass tables, but I do. People in my newsroom have heard me object because it seems like all the women on these shows have to wear sleeveless dresses, mm-hmm. even in the middle of January where the men are wearing suits and ties.
It is ridiculous, isn't
it? They will say, I've read about this, and the women will say that's the style now.
That's not the style.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
That's not the style in the business world.
Michelle Obama had fostered that style.
Well,
everybody talked about her guns.
A reflection of it.
Yeah. What about the Battle of the Titans that is soon going to happen at 9 o'clock? You have Hannity on Fox. You have Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. And entering that fray at 9 o'clock is going to be Chris Cuomo on CNN, who will get his own program.
Speaking of guns, huh? Right.
Yes, right. He likes to show them off. He'll come on with a T-shirt.
Well, it would be only fair, don't you think? If they make the women show up in sleeveless, they should do that with Andrew.
And the first time there's a Mario Cuomo, or I'm sorry, an Andrew Cuomo controversy that was required to be discussed on cable news, what's Chris Cuomo going to do?
Yep. So, by the way, if you're just joining us and you're wondering what this is all about, this is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Dr. Alan Chartok is here. Ira Fussfeld making the last point there. Judy Patrick, editor of the Daily Gazette, and I'm Rex Smith from the Times Union. Here's good news. Google is committing $300 million to, quote, strengthen quality journalism. Google and Facebook, you know, swallow up 2/3 of the digital advertising, of all the digital advertising in the world. So it makes sense. I'm sorry, Amazon is in there. The three of them swallow up 2/3. So Google is now saying that they're going to have a fact-checking venture funded by Google that will be based at the Poynter Institute, a media-wise project aimed at students from middle school upward to work on news literacy, to try to teach young people what the difference is between news and non-news.
This is music to your heart, isn't it, Rick?
It's a good thing. How about that?
Now, you know, that's so interesting, this whole business, because we know right now kids don't read newspapers. We know they don't watch television. We know they generally don't listen to the radio. And so it's social media where they're getting their stuff, if they're getting it at all. Because I have to say, on a couple of recent occasions, I've had the opportunity to sit in with some students and to ask them some basic questions. And unfortunately, they knew very little of the material.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I hate to sound ungrateful to Google, but it does seem like they've just thrown us a bone.
Yeah, very much a drop in the bucket.
Here's a $5 tip. And guys like Rex fall for it, of course, because he is so committed, you know, to readership and to literacy for young people. And he just goes,
we're training a puppy in our home. And the trainer that we have is one who believes in positive reinforcement, says the puppy doesn't really know very much. And what you really need to do is reward the behavior that you're looking for. And so in light of that, I'm applauding Google for giving $3 million to the Poynter Institute and $300 million overall to strengthen quality journalism. It may be a drop in the bucket, but let's hear
it. Very nice. It will not solve the problems of the small newspapers and large newspapers around this country that have lost readership and advertising revenue, and it ultimately will be a good investment for Google because it will strengthen parts of journalism that they eventually will benefit from by aggregating it.
You know, I'm fascinated by something you guys said before. Can I go back for a second? And, you know, it's so interesting that you said that the panels are made up of the working journalists.
No, we were talking about that off the air, yes.
Oh, we said it.
I don't know what you're talking about, so it must have been before the
microphone. Alan was denigrating newspaper business with Judy and I pointed out how the panels on cable news typically rely on print reporters.
It's so interesting because, if you think about it, that may be the future model. In other words, the cable shows may own the entire news distribution system and hire all the reporters.
Right. I don't know that would serve local communities, though. That's the topic. I mean, we have 1,400 daily newspapers in the communities around the country and thousands more weeklies. These are serving local audiences. Cable news is not going to do that. What do you do about the financial pressure that is confronting all the local news outlets whose work is not done by anybody else if the newspapers don't do
Rex,
it?
What do you do?
It largely is going to go away. I have not seen the barrier that says, okay, this is as far as it's going to go. It keeps rolling downhill. I mean, Rex made an excellent point last week's program regarding my former company, Digital First Media, which is slashing and slashing. And I'm not defending them by any means. I'm not on the payroll anymore. I don't have to do that. But who else is willing to buy newspapers these days?
Right.
I mean,
Digital First just bought the Boston Herald.
And outbid by a considerable amount the Gatehouse newspapers. I mean, do you want to blame somebody for the kind of ownership that a hedge fund provides? Maybe we should be blaming the sellers. Or if the hedge fund is the only buyer, then what does that say about the newspaper business?
Yeah. We're going to have to get, and the difficulty actually is the decline of the financial base for all of these entities, which has been retail outlets, right? Brick and mortar stores are mm-hmm. dying. Google is replacing them and other.
Amazon
is what I'm looking for here. Yeah. Thank you. And so what do you do when those advertisers who have provided the financing for three quarters of the revenue that local newspapers have used, when they're gone?
But you still have automobile dealers, don't you?
To a much lesser extent.
And the other issue is maybe we need a membership model like public radio or I believe that paid content is the savior. I think that people are just going to have to pony up the money. I know that means that poor people may not always have access to good news, but I do not see advertising as being
But one of the things I have to say, Judy, to that is that I think finally, you know, the newspaper people are getting smarter about that. they are charging less money to get on. So they say, okay, it's a nickel for a week or something like that.
Well, I don't know. How is that smart? That doesn't give you enough revenue to actually fund the newsroom.
Right, it's not nearly enough money.
It's more money than you would have had if you didn't charge that nickel.
Right.
I tell you what, if the print newspaper disappeared tomorrow and all you were trying to finance is the digital product, still only charging $1 a month or whatever the cheap price is not going to be nearly enough to maintain the staff that you need.
$1 a week. We've had that problem. My company has in Seattle. You know, Seattle used to have two vibrant newspapers, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, which my company owned, mm-hmm. and the Seattle Times, which was half owned by a family and half by Knight Ridder. And the PI, as our paper was called, went out of business in print and maintained its digital newsroom, which is shrinking and shrinking. Its imprint is not, that is, its visibility is not as high because they've lost the print product, which has a promotional value, and they just don't have enough advertising revenue to, you can't charge enough for the digital ads to support a real newsroom. So it's difficult. So, I mean, you're right that we need to charge something for the content. As Judy says, people need to pay for content, but there's a great resistance to that and complaints from, you know, aggregators, the people who take our content for free and make it available.
I'm a big admirer of aggregators.
Well, that's great, and it's because, you shouldn't expect to get around the paywall.
Yeah.
Because our reporters expect to be paid. And if you're going to give away information, how are you going to pay reporters?
Well, no less an expert than Rupert Murdoch, Alan's favorite, has suggested that some of these aggregators ought to pay the newspapers for having their sites linked to their website. In other words, the aggregator is theoretically making money by drawing people onto its site, and then the reason people go to its site is to read the content that others have worked about. Why don't we charge those aggregators for the, much like in the TV model.
The TV model, exactly. Yeah. So that if you're a subscriber to one of the great TV...
ESPN does not... If you're Time Warner Cable and you want to run ESPN, you've got to pay ESPN something for it. You can't just steal the signal.
But it is interesting, fascinating to me. Okay, so let's say you get an aggregator. I know one very well who I much admire.
Well, he's got to fix his site. It's not user-friendly.
Yeah, okay, so you're right. Grumpy old Ira has said his thing now. But what happens is there's always then the consideration by the aggregators that maybe they'll start to offer original content. Now, what's the difference then between the aggregator who is basically taking your stuff from you, right, Rex, and also becoming you? Starting to do the same thing.
That'd be great, but there, so far the economics aren't there. The aggregators, where are they going to get the money? They're going to be in the same situation we are if they're going to have a newsletter and maybe two reporters, which is the case, for example, City and State, which covers New York State government. They've got three or four journalists now, but basically they take other people's content and put it out there.
Yeah,
so
not good.
It's not going to. I don't see how that's going to be financially sustainable. They end up being supported by events, which we are doing more of, you know, charge people to come to forums and so on.
And you're looking for non-traditional revenue streams.
Right.
Carry you.
And often when people are looking for news, they're just reading the first couple of paragraphs of a story, so they don't have an incentive to click to go to the original site. So it is a real deterrent for us. Being aggregated doesn't bring us the page views that we really need to sustain.
Well, you know, I know we're out of time, and I'm sorry for interrupting, Judy, as always. However, I have to say, I've been looking in this table since we've been here, and I've been thinking maybe it's time to change this marble top to glass.
Object, Ira, object.
I objectify.
All right. That is the Media Project. You can share your thoughts, media@wamc.org, and we'll be happy to share your views in the next show. Dr. Alan Chartok is here. Ira Fussfeld from Kingston. Judy Patrick of the Daily Gazette. I'm Rex Smith from the Times Union, and we thank you all for joining us. And thanks to our producer, Dave Gustine, and all the good folks at WAMC. It's the Media Project.
They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Thank you. now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.